You're listening to Sync Beast. I'm Graham, your host, and I've dedicated my career to understanding how to get my music in front of big brands and the ways that I can build my tracks to increase the odds of getting sync placements predictably. It's the strategy that I walk producers and songwriters through inside the Sync Beast Accelerator, and it was born from a bunch of stories and experiences that I want to share with you so that you can build your sync catalog with confidence and grow faster than ever before. I'm here to let you know that sync is just a game, and I'm going to show you how to play it coming up. What's going on? So today I want to talk about how to absolutely, positively destroy your sync licensing career and ensure that you'll never, ever get another sync again. How to absolutely destroy your career. That's what I want to talk about today. We're just going to get right into it. Number one, to destroy your sync career, you need to overthink every single track or idea that you get until you suck the life out of it and put so much pressure on yourself to get it perfect. Look, this comes from experience. Obsessing over the tracks that you make is awesome. I love that. I'm stoked on it. It's an amazing skill that most people don't have. But I used to obsess over my tracks in the wrong way. I'd build myself up to think that, you know, whatever amazing track I was making would finally make my sync career pop off. When in reality, it only stifled me from moving quickly. All that pressure that I put on myself to make the tracks really, really good ended up slowing me down. And one of the most important things that earning six figures in sync has taught me is that sync loves two things, quality and speed. When my tracks were low quality and when they cut corners on production, I synced less. I got fewer syncs. And when I took forever ruminating on ideas to make sure they were absolutely picture perfect, I synced less. It sucked. Overthinking crushed me for like 3 years. And it made me feel awful. Like I could never move forward no matter how hard I tried. Okay, so that's number one. Number two, one of the fastest ways to destroy your sync licensing career, just obliterate it, is to keep starting new ideas and then stopping before they're done. Because you want to work on everything all the time. Man, this is what keeps people where they're at. And it's what makes them feel like the industry is unfair, like they're not right for it, but they're blind to the fact that it's really just them. My brain moves like 100 miles an hour. I swear to God. And the shitty thing is, I can't help it. Like I can't escape it. I don't know if you can relate, but it's like I'm held against my will and forced to ideate constantly. Like just flood ideas out of me. You know, I got a voice memo that I need to get down. I got a track that's in progress. I got to print stems. I got to archive projects. I got to go eat lunch. I got to walk the dog. I mean, it really can be too much at times. And especially when it comes to actually writing and producing songs for sync, the thing that totally screwed me over, not finishing the tracks that I started. It's really as simple as that. Because it's too easy to judge raw ideas too quickly, like too early on. It's easy to call an incomplete thing a piece of trash. But the truth is that all the gold mines in the world started out as little pieces of trash, figuratively. It's not scientifically true. I mean, the only difference between why you write pieces of trash and the person next to you doesn't, most likely, is because they didn't stop halfway through at some point in the process. They actually finished the thing they started, which means they have 10 times more data than you do. And again, this is like a royal you. The person next to you would have made so many more creative moves, so many more, you know, bad decisions and good decisions. They've essentially lit the path with a flashlight. They went deeper than you were willing to go. And you're still hanging out at the start of the path, You know, at the opening of the cave, it's all dark. You're too afraid to take a step forward. I'm telling you, I'm so glad I finished some of those garbage tracks that I started. If a library somehow magically wants it, then there's a good chance someone's going to license it down the road. Don't get me wrong, it might be 2 years from now, and it might not be for much, but anything helps. If it's a $200 sync, and you have 10 tracks like it, and they all sync at least once in a year, then that means those pieces of trash would have earned $2,000, right? 200 times 10. It's not life-changing money, by any means. But it's more than what most people make from sync in their entire life. That really puts things into perspective for me. All right, number three, cranking along. If you want to destroy your sync licensing career and any chance at getting another sync for the rest of your life, then you're going to want to isolate yourself. Don't invite anyone into your creative process because you're too immature to relinquish any shred of control. Oh, damn. This is a spicy one. I wonder how many people stopped listening after that. If you're still here, I'm rooting for you. We're going to get through it. It's tough. We're going to get through it. Okay. So isolation was the vampire of my career for years. I had no idea how much collaboration would actually fuel my growth in sync until I experienced it. Like, I just had to do it. I look back at when I started and I realized that I wasn't collabing with people for two reasons. I either wanted the track to be made in a super specific way, and I didn't believe that anyone else could bring valuable ideas to the table or make it better, like it was all mine. Or I was greedy and I wanted all the glory and the biggest possible percentage for myself. And both were absolute bullshit reasons for not bringing people onto my projects. It's bullshit. I look at other people doing it, I'm like, bullshit. I look at myself doing it in the past, bullshit. Literally, the only way that I sustain in the new sync landscape right now is because I choose to collaborate. I'm not shitting you. Every single project, I want to bring on a specialist. You've probably heard me talk about this in the past. Because I spent about 5 to 6 years doing all the heavy lifting on my own. And guess what? I burned out. I made good money, but it wasn't sustainable money. I couldn't sustain it. So I can officially say that even when I was making more of a living than I ever thought that I could, I was still figuring it out, naturally. And I learned that isolating myself was my problem. I couldn't believe how blind to it I was. And I saw so many other people cranking out more songs and more songs. They weren't all better than what I was doing, but they were definitely doing more work than me. They were outputting more. And I was still cranking out a shit ton of music every year. They were always ahead. They were always ahead of me. And I wanted a piece of what they had, ultimately. I wanted to move at their pace. But it was really freaking hard because I couldn't let go of the idea that I had to give up control if I wanted to leverage other people. I'm telling you, the burnout that I experienced wasn't worth it at all. One bit. I wouldn't wish it on anybody. And then the amount of energy I had to muster to overcome it and dig myself out of a creative pit, I mean, it almost broke me. It definitely left a mark on my sync career. And I do not want that to happen to you. So please stop creating an isolation. Please. Unless you want to destroy your career, then continue. Carry on. By all means. Okay. So number four. If you want to destroy your career in sync, you'll definitely want to gatekeep your ideas. Your ideas, your techniques, your plugins, just gatekeep it all so that it teaches your nervous system that you're always lacking something that you'll never get back. Ouch. Death to gatekeepers. Am I right? It's stupid. We are so beyond the age of gatekeeping. Anyone worth their salt and what they do or what they've accomplished did so on the back of not gatekeeping. I was raised to not let anyone else know about my ideas. That's just me. I don't know about you. Or like, if I had a good idea, that I needed to hold it close for fear of losing it completely. Like someone's just going to snatch it out of my hands, right? And I learned this wasn't actually true when I started getting hired as a freelance composer. Literally for my ideas. Literally for the things that come out of me. So I get paid to bring my ideas to the table. It was a weird experience. They hired me to speak my ideas into existence and to show other people what the hell is going on in my head. How are we going to solve this problem? It's music, right? The brand has a problem. They need it solved through music. So they hired me. And I essentially got paid to not gatekeep. And it paid me handsomely. It was the complete opposite of what I'd been taught my entire life. It felt weird to hear myself giving away my production tricks to the people I worked on music with. It was weird. They'd see a problem, and I'd voice a solution. It's part of being on a team. And with that solution, I'd likely give away some of the most crucial techniques to my signature sound or, you know, how I did things or whatever. And really, all of this comes down to an overcompensation for how important I thought I was or how important I thought my skills were. It essentially taught me how skills are just power tools. That's what I came out with on the other side. You know, they're just power tools. And if they get in the hands of someone who doesn't know how to use them, then it ends there. You know, they might hurt themselves, obviously. I don't wish that on anyone. But they'll just hold the, you know, whatever it is, the circular saw. And they'll go, I don't know how to use this. I think it's a pretty cool way of thinking about it. I mean, it relieved a ton of pressure for me. I was overcompensating, basically operating under the assumption that I worked super, super hard to get where I was, and then I'm unwilling to give up the things that helped me get there. And another thing that comes to mind is how it trained my brain to think that I couldn't do it again. I couldn't get there again by holding on. And that's so damaging. It was so damaging to, you know, how I thought about producing music for Sync and growing my network and seeing opportunities and seizing them. And now I look at it and I just see a little boy with a ton of talent and drive and ambition who saw everyone else in the world as competition. And I want to shake him silly and say, look, dude, everyone is in competition with you because you believe that they are. You can choose to turn them into collaborators, but you're too busy thinking you're something special. You think your skills and your plugins and your techniques are special. Again, I'm talking to myself here. It was a tough lesson for me to learn because, again, I saw the people that I called my competition. I saw them work with other people that I called my competition. Like, it literally short-circuited my brain. I couldn't get it until I realized that sharing my ideas and my opportunities and my gear and whatever else could only help me, because down the road, I now have a really strong network of people that I can tap who trust me more, and we gel better, and things just fall into place, and things just feel good when we create together, which also falls in line with number 5. It gets real easy to destroy your Sync career when you never add people to your roster of specialists, or if you never expand your talent pool. And the concept here is simple. If you're only ever working with the same people, then you're only ever going to get the same results. And that could mean creatively, like ideas. It could mean quality, like production. Or professionally, like opportunities. Good, valuable, in-demand ideas are your prime directive in Sync. I fully believe, based on 10 years of experience, you can't polish a piece of crap. Like, it doesn't matter how good the production sounds. If the track, the actual composition is bad, it's going to be a dud. It will not perform. And the best way that I've brought fresh, new, valuable ideas to my tracks, well, you guessed it, bringing other people on. Preferably people who are better than me in some regard. It takes some humility, but you need to do it. Because it's not for you. It's not for me. It's for the music. And if you put that kind of investment in the music, it's going to return to you in your bank account. That's the idea. People who were better than me made my tracks better. It could be melody writing or lyrics or, you know, adding ear candy to the track. Whatever they do is meant to increase the value of my tracks. So in theory, the more high-level, high-performing people I have at my disposal means that I get access to 10 times more valuable ideas that I can leverage. So let's keep it moving. Number 6, you can destroy your sync licensing career by focusing on filling your catalog with too many tracks at once because you think the syncs will come pouring in when you do. Just more, more, more. And again, I've been doing this for a long time and I have a sizable catalog and I can confidently tell you that the amount of tracks I've produced is not a badge of honor or a silly little trophy to me. It's not something that I go around telling people. Just look at anyone on social media who does what we do. What's in their bio? Usually credits. The people they've worked with. The brands who buy their music. You're never going to see anyone's Instagram bio say, I've got 3,000 tracks. It's like, cool. Do they make any money? Crickets, right? It's essentially not cool to boast about quantity because it means nothing if the tracks aren't usable to the people with the money, the people who want to buy it. So instead, I believe that it's more of a badge of honor to have the right strategy where you're doing the right things and you're executing in the right way. I'll say that again. The right strategy of doing the right things in the right way. Nothing will ever beat strategy. I know that's so hard to comprehend if you haven't experienced it yet. Like strategy, what is that? But I'll bring it back to how sync is just a game. If you've ever played Battleship, my wife and I just got done watching Squid Game, whatever, the Squid Game game show. They played that giant game of Battleship, if you saw it. No spoilers. But sync is a lot like that. It's a lot like Battleship. There's this ocean in front of you, but it's hidden behind a giant wall. And there are ships in that ocean, but you can't see them because of that wall. And so it's your job to fire missiles based on where you think the ships are on the other side that you can't see, and you want to try and sink them. And you go back and forth, you shoot, I shoot, you shoot, I shoot. That's how you play the game. That is the point of the game. And so you want a strategy for how you fire those missiles because you only have so many. And if you fire and you get a hit, then you're closer to sinking that ship, whatever one it is. You just got to guess and hit it a couple more times to bring it down. You're essentially going to want to stay close to where you hit that first ship, to where that first missile hit. That is the typical strategy with Battleship. You don't want to fire at random, because you can miss out on capitalizing on the patterns that surface over time. The same goes for writing tracks for sync. Anybody who just fills their catalog with as many tracks as possible are most likely the ones without a strategy they can trust. They're not looking at the patterns. They want to do a lot of work, but they're shooting in the dark until they hit something. And that can be so, so damaging to their growth. And that's another thing that I would hate for you to experience. But if you want to, then so be it. But by focusing on quality, quality moves, quality strategy, quality research, quality execution, you actually allow the patterns to surface that much faster so that you can repeat the things that work, hint, hint, and not destroy your career in sync. Number 7, if you want to destroy your sync career, never, ever emulate or make your own versions of tracks that are getting placed in ads right now. Just don't do it. Because the tracks that are on TV definitely got someone paid. Definitely. A brand bought it, right? I mean, it's on TV. It's in an ad. So if that worked, wouldn't you want to copy it? I mean, I guess not if you want to destroy your career. Somebody got paid for it. Could have been a lot. Could have been a little. But that doesn't matter. Because if you want to destroy your sync career, don't pay attention to all that good data. Don't let that valuable music inspire you. Because if you were to try and make it, the music that brands are buying right now, all it's going to do is increase your chances of getting a sync. And you don't want those chances, right? You want to destroy your chances of making any money in sync. So I recommend you stay away and just make whatever you want. Sarcasm, obviously. End sarcasm. I can't tell you how many times some random YouTube pre-roll ad, whatever, skip this ad button type ad, how many times it inspired me to just start writing. It wasn't about the music itself or, you know, how good it was, how good I thought it was. It was the fact that I saw something that a brand paid for. Like, it's that simple. And if it seemed like something I could make, you know, not ripping it off, but doing my own version of it, then why not give it a try? I basically have nothing to lose. And this is when we get into talking about creative references. You'll hear me talk about them quite a bit. And the basic thought here is that everything can be a creative reference if you let it. Now, it's not always the best strategy because not every reference is created equal. So what I've gotten really good at is choosing which refs to use. And so if I was watching stupid YouTube videos or whatever, and an ad popped up with music that I thought that I could make, then I'd stop what I was doing, I'd open Logic, and I'd get to work. Input, output. It really was as simple as that. And those tracks essentially did two things for me. On the one hand, they gave me a shot at making more money because I was using a track that someone paid for as the creative basis for my own. Obviously, without getting too close and infringing on copyright. I feel like I don't have to say that, but here I am saying it. I don't recommend you infringe on copyright, okay? But I would use the tracks that brands paid for to inspire my own. And that set me up for success infinitely better than anything else. This is why I don't often reference, you know, radio music or Spotify artists, because I have no gauge for whether someone paid for it or not. It's just free to listen to. So that's one thing this process did for me. And on the other hand, it gave me a shot at just making another track, possibly in a style that's outside my boundaries. I really, really love the 1% rule, the idea of getting better by 1% every single day. It's a really cool way to look at growth and how I'm growing and whatever irons I've got in the fire. And so that same 1% rule applies to the music that I tried making over the years. It was like every day I made it a goal to try something that was 1% further from my pocket, 1% outside the norm for me, or 1% harder to make. And it had the same effect as personal growth. You know, it helped me try new things without being totally overwhelmed or daunted by the task. Because trying new things, new styles, new production techniques, they can be scary. Absolutely. But by taking fast action, just saying, you know what? I can do that. I don't know how, but I will figure it out. And if I don't figure it out the first time, it'll suck and I'll figure it out the next time. So be it. It's the following through and actually doing it and finishing a track that helped me to not only increase the value of my catalog, but also add another creative tool to my tool belt. I still use those same tools today that I learned, you know, 7-8 years ago. They stuck with me. They grew with me. Now, the one I'll leave you with, number 8. This may or may not apply to you, depending on where you're at, but one of the fastest ways you can destroy your career in sync is to have more library relationships instead of feeding the highest earning opportunity that you already have. More relationships versus the most valuable relationships. This is a tricky one because as time goes on, I see more and more producers and artists signing new deals all the time and basically trying to spread their catalog out between a bunch of different sync houses. And in theory, it makes sense. Like, I get it. They think they're diversifying their portfolio or their assets. And they think that they're giving their assets more opportunities to earn, you know, by scattering them. But in practice, I've seen a lot of my success from pretty much doing the exact opposite. And I've seen it happen with other people too. The opposite being going all in on your highest paying relationships. So if that's a library, then find the one that's paid you the most and consider what might happen if you just feed them all the music you make for an entire year. 12 months, that's the commitment. And please don't get me wrong, there's a few ways to go about this. You could choose who to go all in on based on how much money you've earned, yes. But you can also base it on who their clients are. So if you have two sync houses you're choosing between, and one gets bigger, better brand pitches than the other, then you may want to go with them instead. Even if you haven't earned much money with them, it's not all about money. Client base is everything when it comes to sync, because you want to get those big pitches. And not every sync house or music licensing company is created equal. They all have different rosters and standards for quality. I'm not going to get into that in this episode. But by choosing the one opportunity that paid me the most, I was able to grow that much faster. In my case, Marmoset paid me. So I dedicated all of my time to that opportunity and that relationship. And by doing so, they had me back repeatedly for projects. And I got to benefit from the inside knowledge they'd feed me based on what their clients were asking for. I was a kid in a candy shop. Like, I couldn't think of a better situation to position myself for big brand syncs when they, the company, knew what they wanted and they asked me for it. I basically had no other option but to win. They set me up for success, and it was my availability to receive those opportunities that did it. And that was incredibly helpful to my career. Incredibly helpful. They were able to study up and stay on top of the music that I made. And that increased the chances of my tracks becoming the go-tos for certain pitches. Go-tos. And that's incredibly important. It's so important to be on the radar of the people who actually pitch your music. Because sync is, ultimately, it's just a visibility game. How visible are your tracks in a library? If nobody knows about them, or if they can't find them, then how are they going to know to pitch them? It's a simple way of thinking about it, but it really puts things into perspective. And it hopefully shows you what's at stake and why doubling down on your best opportunities, even if they don't amount to much right now, they'll always be the answer if you want to grow bigger and faster in sync. But if you don't want to do that, then I recommend doing all 8 of those career-destroying things that we just talked about today. And I suggest you do them regularly so that you can absolutely ensure that you'll never grow the value of your catalog. And so you can never create better relationships, and so that you'll never get a sync. And here's the crazy part, okay? This is big. This is a big thought right here. It might be revolutionary. You don't have to do all of these things to destroy your career. Isn't that cool? Just doing one of them can do you in for good. Even one of these things that we talked about today, if you do it long enough, over and over again, it can completely obliterate your chances of winning this game. It's crazy. Doing the right things for a sustained amount of time will always do the opposite. It'll always put you one step ahead of yourself. And that's really where you want to be. I know there was a lot of sarcasm in this episode, but I'm telling you, the right things for a sustained amount of time. Do whatever it takes to do that. It will pay off. You will be where you want to be. You want to be taking on things right now that are slightly outside your comfort zone. They're slightly outside of your capacity for what you can take on. It's that extra push that's going to grow you. It's going to give you that edge when it really counts. And then later, it'll make it much easier to take on the things in front of you because you've already done something a little harder. It was already hard in the past. It's like if you lifted a 10-pound weight every single day for, 30 days, and you got really used to that. And then someone on the street says, they'll pay you $100 to lift a 5-pound weight. It's a no-brainer. It's half the weight of what you're used to. $100. Of course you'll do it. It'd be the easiest payday you've ever had. And that's why I give you these things to avoid. These 8 things, avoid them. The shitty thing is that they're incredibly difficult to avoid. But by doing the difficult things in practice, game day gets so much easier. When you have to bring your A game and really perform, it's easy because you already did the hard stuff. You avoided all the cheap distractions. And instead, you chose to focus on the things that actually matter. The relationships that actually matter. The strategies that actually matter. The growth that actually matters. There will always be more opportunities to get distracted than there will be to focus. So stay the course. Do the thing you say you will. Finish it. See it through. And move on to the next thing without jumping for a shiny object along the way. And that's where I'll leave you today. Thanks for investing in yourself. Thanks for putting in the time. I want you to be able to think better in this crazy industry. I want you to think better about your music and how you make it. And I want you to think differently from everybody else, because that's what gives you an edge in anything that demands you to create. If you're listening to this because you want to be here and you want to soak up all the crazy ways that I think about sync, then thank you. Thank you for showing up. I don't record these episodes for me. It's for you. So if these principles helped you today, then please consider leaving a review. It would really help the reach of this podcast. And you could send this episode to someone who needs it. It's literally like 2 clicks. It's so easy. I mean, if they can get what you got out of it, then think about how you'll both be on the same level and how you can use it as a team. That's what it's all about. So you can find me at syncbeast.co on Instagram. And be sure to catch the next episode, because I'm talking a ton more about how to think at the highest level of sync. It's the game I play every single day, and I want to see you win. So stay hungry, and I will talk to you soon.